You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation, and tonight's episode is New Ground. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
And I am the Klingon from Indiana.
The Klingon from Indiana. That sounds like Brian Detamore.
Who, me?
Yeah, you sound like Brian Detamore.
Well, hopefully I'm still the same co-host that rocked the airways with you. Which, by the way, Orville's coming up. We're going to have to get ready. Plus, we need to really start getting back on and talk about Discovery, too.
I have not seen much about Discovery at all. I'll be honest. I really don't know much about it. So, yeah, you're right. I do need to get to that.
We also need to be talking about all the new track news that's been going on out there, too. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff going on.
Well, then we need to get Colin on for that. I'm sure if there's track news, there's Colin. All right, so Roberts, James, how you been lately?
Oh, I've been doing okay. Not too bad. By the way, you might have noticed on your Twitter feed, of course, is that we're now in the middle of, as we are recording this, we're in the middle of Star Trek Las Vegas. So it marks an entire year since we ran into each other. And to be honest with you, I am having... I don't think I was ever going to go back the following year, so to go back every year. But looking at it now, I'm pretty sure I'm going to head over there next year. I think that will be pretty cool.
Okay.
So I'm very jealous of all these people that are out there and putting stuff up on Twitter. And of course, the Discovery guys are on and they're doing their panels. And I have not been following it at all. I've not even got a way of watching Discovery when it launches. I'll have to get myself signed up to Netflix.
Isn't it on CBS, Brian?
Well, it's on CBS in the U.S.
It's on CBS on the Total Access. It's not going to be on public. You got to buy the app or get the access to the full CBS library in order to watch it.
Okay, James, I do have CBS All Access, and I also have a thing called PlayOn that will record CBS shows. So I will get that recorded if I can, and we'll work on a way for you to be able to watch it, even if it's...
I will be getting Netflix, don't worry.
It's going to be on there.
It's going to be on Netflix in the UK, so anywhere out of North America, I think it's on Netflix.
Okay, good. That's what you need then. Okay, all right. So, New Ground. Let's see here. New Ground. Well, the synopsis for tonight's episode is Worf's son, Alexander, comes to live on the Enterprise. The crew helps guide a test vehicle for a revolutionary new form of interstellar travel. I don't know about that. Guest stars for tonight's show include Georgia Brown as Helena Rozenko, and I did read this was her last appearance anywhere, as she died about 8 months later. So I find it ironic. She says, "Oh, I'm not ready for a grave." No. Well, actually, she was ready for a grave, and that's sad. Brian Bunzal sounds Japanese. Brian Bunzal as Alexander. I don't want to be a warrior, Rozenko. Richard McGon, I like it when other people read this. Richard McGonagall as Jadar. Jennifer Edwards as Miss Kyle. Sheila Franklin as a somewhat cute little ensign. And Majel Barrett as the voice of the ship's computer. So, what do we think about New Ground? Brian, you wanted to review this episode. I'm curious why.
Well, they were talking about, Worf is talking to Alexander about taking the steps to be a warrior in the Klingon Empire. And I thought it would be appropriate to have someone with the Klingon knowledge to kind of talk through it and everything, and with his viewpoints and stuff too, as a kid. Mm-hmm. I thought it'd be it's a good episode to have a Klingon expert on this one.
Okay. All right. And Doc, what about you? What are your thoughts?
Well, I suppose on one hand, I think it's nice that at least they acknowledge that Worf does have a son, and he's just not completely written out of existence since Reunion. But I'm not a huge fan of Alexander coming back onto the ship, and I had no recollection that this was the Soliton Wave episode as the Bean line. I had forgotten I detached those two. So, overall, not a huge fan.
Okay. Same here. Even the Gilvels look stupid. I don't like this episode too much. I do like the idea of the Soliton Wave. I'm shocked that Geordi is looking forward to be putting out of work. But I don't think necessarily that's true either. It's a very interesting concept, but I personally cannot see how a wave can push a ship for any sustainable distance, especially a wave that just grows itself for no reason. I mean, where does it get its own energy from, and how could it possibly grow in this episode? So there's problems with this premise. Alexander? I can't stand Alexander. Never could stand Alexander. The only thing he's going to do good in the future is when he gets with Mrs. Troi. That's one of the episodes, not too long after Gene died, that I really like that episode. And we'll see about that one.
But to be clear, we're not sure that he did get with Mrs. Troi. But they did have a fun afternoon.
Well, in defense of Alexander... And I agree with, for once, Lou, I have to agree with you. I didn't like Alexander as a child, but I did like his ferocity and his rebelliousness when he got into DS9 and they actually put a actor in there instead of some little tyke. But I've had the chance to watch him grow up and then got to read how he was as a warrior in the books. And in the end, I kind of grew to like the character in the end. But I also like the fact that he understands what his mom wanted him to go through, too, as well. And I like the fact that he fought his father tooth and nail on this warrior stuff in the end, too. Because it wasn't him. I think that's the part of him that his mother, that's his part of his mother's... mentality or view is, yeah, I'm a Klingon, yeah, I'm a badass, but you know what? I don't have to be a warrior to prove that point.
Well, when we get to DS9, Brian, consider yourself on that particular episode, because I have some problems with him being the ship's fool. I can't imagine him not getting killed within a week on that ship. It stuns me. Unless these people were afraid of Worf, you know, killing them back.
No. believe it or not, you have to look at it from a human mentality than a Klingon. This is coming bad from a Klingon, right? Okay. But did you not have a time somebody that you just kept around, they bungled everything, they screwed everything up, but they felt like it was like a lucky charm? Okay, and that's how the Klingons took Alexander Why bully him? He's a lucky charm. Yeah, we have problems when he screws up something, but it makes us better because we can fix the problem and still be in combat and still kick ass. Them, they took him as a token of luck, somebody to bully and beat up and eventually kill.
So he was Gilligan, in other words.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Every time they...
But it also shows that Klingons aren't the stereotype we're used to seeing, okay? They do have honor, they do have feelings, and they do have sympathy once in a while, okay? And they see it because he does work hard trying not to screw up. He can't help it, but they use it as a way to make themselves better. That's how I look at it. And like I said, I've read the books after the fact, and Alexander ends up being one mean SOB. He doesn't use physical weapons like his father does. Okay, this kid can blow a gnat from a mile away off a water buffalo's backside. Okay, that's how good of a shot he has become using energy weapons. So he might not be a good fighter, but he can't miss. And that's the beauty of him. I mean, this kid is an awesome shot. For a Klingon, that's saying a hell of a lot, considering the fact most of the time they're using mech lifts and bat lifts for combat.
Okay. All right, so anyway, let's come back to this episode here, because we're approaching the planet B'Elanna 3. Nice! That sounds like our future chief engineer of the Starship Voyager, B'Elanna 3. Not only does she get a planet named after her, she has an entire star system named after her.
Gee, it must be nice.
You're assuming that she wasn't named after the planet, right? Maybe, maybe Mr. and Mrs. Torres went away to B'Elanna 3 on one episode and, did the deed.
on one of the B'Elanna planets? Yeah, that could be. Mm. Interesting. Okay, so we're there to test a new method of propulsion that doesn't require dilithium chambers, matter antimatter, gasoline, 10W-40 motor oil, or hell, it doesn't even require an engine. And what's weird is that LaForge is excited about this because it's going to be like being there for Chuck Yeager or Zefren Cochran, which he was there for Zefren Cochran later, but he's just so excited that he's going to be put out of a job soon.
Well, if it would work, yeah, for short, medium range warp transports for transportation for merchants, it's a great money-saving tool for a merchant because they can just ride that wave to wherever they need to go and don't cost them no money for warp drive maintenance or anything like that. I mean, for them, that's a blessing.
But the thing is,
more money in their pocket.
I don't know. James is going to be the better space guy than me. I can't see this being possible at all because you still have to have something that generates the wave to push the ship. So it's not like a ship can generate its own wave to push itself, right? Or could it?
Well, so I have big problems with what they're proposing here, because I think that the idea of a wave makes it sound romantic because you can ride the wave. But I think the equivalent here, right, is that instead of having a car that you can drive and it has its own engine and you can turn, what you basically have is a whole load of places where your car is basically launched at 1,000 miles an hour in a straight direction, and you hope that you're headed in the right direction, and as you approach, you know, whichever city you've been thrown towards at a billion miles an hour, they slow you down gently. Yeah. And I kind of think that doesn't make any sense at all.
No.
So
it really doesn't.
Okay, guys, look at this for a moment as a old-fashioned ship with wind for its propulsion. Basically, that's what this whole wave technology is basically talking about. Okay? Grant you, when there's no wind, it's kind of hard for the ship to move. I grant you that. But the wave concept is basically like an old colonial ship with the wind in its sails going to wherever it needs to go. Eventually, I think after they get it sustainable, then they'll be able to manipulate it to where they need to turn it and move it to the right direction like you would a ship. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that's the concept behind this, if that helps the logical and the super intelligent here figure out why they were doing it the way they were doing it.
And they kind of revisit this, right, with on DS9, what's the episode called? Explorers, where Sisko's on the Sun ship, and I think that's a much more maybe realistic way of having the sailing analogy.
Wasn't they riding the solar winds?
Mm-hmm. Indeed, yeah.
Ship, I think the solar ship. Yeah.
The thing that I liked in this episode is that you do get hit by the wave and you go into instant warp, and all I was thinking is that I really hope the inertial dampeners are working properly, because if not, that's going to leave a stain on the back window.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I can't argue with you on that one, Doc. Okay.
So then you need something to initiate the wave that then hits you and takes you away at a very, very, very fast speed. But then you need something to dissipate the wave, and if that something doesn't work, not only do you bypass the planet, slam into the planet, destroy the planet?
Basically.
So I think Geordi's safe, because I don't think this technology could possibly be implemented any time in his lifetime. However, Geordi's mythological children are, if they want to become engineers, they might be in trouble.
Like I said, I don't think this is a technology that would be normally on a long-range ship. I think this would be more like a medium to short-range warp philosophy on this. Maybe merchants would mostly benefit from this and not directly Starfleet itself. I think Starfleet would have the capability of entering and going in and out of the wave if they need to use it to save work on the dilithium crystals and their warp drive time and everything, but I don't think the fleets would use it as much as the merchants would.
No, I don't either. Unless there's a way for their own ship to create this wave that they then ride. I mean, imagine.
No, they would catch it at one of the launch points and ride it, basically. Right. And then they need to dissipate it to go into their normal warp drive, then they would have some way of dissipating the wave and then click in their normal warp drive and go.
Oh, yeah, I imagine their deflector dish would do it. Perhaps. Okay. But, yeah, just imagine if you could create your own wave. What would Voyager have done with that? Okay, so that's the, I think that's the B storyline. I always thought that was the A story, but I'm not so sure, because there's a lot of, what I'm going to say next. Alexander's on board.
Yeah, I mean, it is, maybe when you watch it the first time around and you're interested in the science-y part, you think, oh, it's the A storyline. But this episode is not the episode of the Soliton wave. It's the episode of Alexander. So it's very much the B storyline.
Who just happens to be there.
Just a quick question. Do Worf's parents not live on Earth? I thought they were on Earth.
They lived in Russia.
Yes.
She drops in while they're in the vicinity.
Yes, because, they were... I mean, she could have been passing by, but... Earth... What was Earth Station Babrushk? Or something. Earth Station Babrushk is where they were at. That's something I remember that in the past. But no, I got a feeling, who knows where they're at? They could be near Earth, and she just hopped on the net first transport. When I heard you were to be here, I had to bring this monster. So, yeah, it's funny when, he says, how long can you stay here? And Alexander's like, oh, I'm not going back. And you could see the look on his mother's face of... Let's talk.
Alexander basically, because of his mother's death and his father just tossed him to the grandparents, he's basically gotten out of control. And Worf really needs to step up and be a father. I'm sorry I'm going to say it, but Worf is a miserable father. Okay, he's never had to be a father. He's never had to deal with children. So for him, this is a whole new experience for him, and he doesn't adapt well for some reason.
No, because everything in his life is orderly. People do what he says, and now he's got this, 13-pound kid walking around who's completely defying him, lying to him in every opportunity. He doesn't know what to do with that.
Well, he grew up with a different structure than Alexander. Mama let him speak his mind, where Worf is more,
Your microphone cut out. I didn't hear what you, Worf is a...
This was the shock of the lifetime for Dad.
Yeah. You said Mom let him speak his mind, where Worf is what?
More disciplined. For a Klingon, diplomatic.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean,
I say that loosely, by the way, for the record.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, he thinks, well, let's just tell him the story about who are the two that he tells him about, Moroth and his brother. What's his name?
Not
Kalas. Well, he calls him Kalas. Kalas and Moroth. And he tells them about their struggles and how they fought and they had to fight because one of them was a bad boy. And I understand. Well, solves that problem. No, it didn't.
The whole problem is that Alexander is in the same boat as Dad was, and that he wasn't around the Klingon culture because Mom was a diplomat. She was all over the place. And same thing with Worf. He started out in the Klingon culture and then ended up being in the Federation culture, and he just basically merged the two together. And Alexander is at that point too, and he's taking Mom's approach to it instead of Dad's approach to it, and Dad can't understand why. Yeah. That's basically it in a nutshell.
Yeah, at least Worf had Nicholas to grow up with. Wherever the hell he came from.
Alexander has nobody.
Uh-uh. Yeah. Okay, so let's see. Alexander's back aboard, and this time he's not going back, so Mama's got some splaining to do. Seems like Klingon children are much different in her 60s than when she was 25. Much different. So, I think we're going to have some very exciting episodes with Alexander. I don't want to be a warrior, Rozhenko.
God, ain't that the truth.
This could be a very quick show. I've only got 11 points. I'll be honest with you. There isn't much to discuss. I mean, the wave, it pushes the test ship. It destroys the test ship because it gained so much energy somehow. Now, what made it gain energy, they don't explain. Or do they? Sufficiently.
No, they don't explain that. But hey, Lou, you need some more points. What are the chances that Worf's parents are trying to get rid of Alexander, not because they're slowing down in their old life, but because they've embraced like a naturalist nudist colony as they have approached the twilight years of their life? Am I the only one thinking that that's plausible?
Sure, why not?
And you don't want your 4-year-old kid wandering around whilst you're doing your exercises.
I can imagine that. Come here, Sergey.
God. I can tell this group's way off the freaking moral scale.
And I have to say, the thing I like about Alexander, at least in this episode, or at least perhaps this actor of Alexander, is that he's so tiny compared to Worf, and they always shoot the scene to make it clear that he's this tiny little baby and Worf's this, you know, giant compared to him. That always tickles me.
You're absolutely right. I mean, this version of Alexander, and isn't this the second or third version of Alexander?
A third, at least.
And I think he's the last one, too. Except for, DS9.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, this guy, this little kid is absolutely tiny, tiny. He had to be like 4, maybe 5.
But he wasn't 4 or 5 in real life.
You don't think?
No, he was much older than that.
Really? He certainly looks it. I guess he can act.
Well, I hope he didn't turn around and say, that's an opinion.
But that's an opinion.
I would imagine he's at least 8 in this episode.
Okay, I'll try and look for that.
Oh, and by the way, I don't want to come across as a bit weird, but I never realized that the actor that played Alexander was white.
Oh, yeah.
I never realized.
Mm-hmm. He actually played... he was born in 1981, and this was done in 1991, late 91.
I guess he's 10 years old. Right.
10 years old. Amazing, because he looks like 4 or 5. But he also plays in a movie my daughter used to like called Blank Check, where this kid comes into possession of this blank check, and he writes it out for $1 million to himself, and then he lives off it and finds out later that it was a mob money that he stole. So it was a pretty interesting, cute little kid flick. But yeah, you're right. He is definitely white. He's different. He was also on Family Ties, Brian. Does that make sense?
I've heard that before, but I've never watched Family Ties.
If he was on Family Ties, he was doing a one-time appearance.
Could be. It could. I'm not sure. I don't. That's where Michael J. Fox was as a teenager, but I don't remember a lot of it either. To be honest, I never really liked that show.
Neither did I. So,
yeah, didn't make it. I didn't like it.
Okay, so here's the thing. Worf takes his son to school for an interview at school. The interview lasts like 2 minutes, and the only thing that he gets asked is what's his name and when was his birth date? And that's it. Man. And couldn't you have done that online? I mean, and then Worf has to run to the captain and he's 2 minutes late from his interview at the school. It seems a rather convoluted, strange couple of scenes.
Well, it's like being tossed being a parent, and then we get to see on the show kind of what it's like to be a parent on the ship, because now we have a kid involved. And sometimes parents don't think about, they've been alone for so long, they don't think about other things like, oh, I got an interview with the teacher. Oh, my God, and I've got this scheduled meeting with my boss. Oh, no, what am I going to do? And they'll go to work not thinking about the teacher thing, because why should they? They've never had a kid around before. Okay, it's I think this is one of them that's kind of – it's a break Alexander into the show, basically, is what this show was all about. But you also get to see some of what the Klingon children have to consider when they're growing up. Well, in the Klingon culture, most of it's not that hard to choose. You're either going to be a warrior or you're not. And if you're not a warrior, then you just basically learn your fighting skills as you go along, learning your science or your judicial or whatever you actually end up going to be. Or you learn to be a warrior. And, I mean, Alexander did try to be a warrior somewhat. He did practice. He did try to work at it and stuff. I'm not saying that he wasn't, but it's just this is one of them sideshow. Hey, we're introducing a new character. We're bringing Alexander back into the game. We're going to have him on the show from now on. We're going to parentize Worf, because we're running out of stuff to write about Worf, so we're going to parentize him and have comical fun with him. That is basically what this whole show was about, if you think about it.
No, sure. And I think they have a little bit too much fun at Worf's expense, with a lot of, when he gets interrupted during the meeting, and he's trying to, I think he gets interrupted twice, right? Once by the school teacher, then by Crusher. It's they're trying to play up the humorous aspect.
I mean, okay. Alexander did like a creature, and he did try his best to try to rescue him, too, so. Oh, I remember this kid.
Yeah, I think he was on there for a while. He was the youngest boy on the show, so no, he was a regular on that, on Family
Ties. That's Alexander.
Yeah. Yeah.
It don't look like him. I'm sorry. No, they did a great job on makeup.
Oh, definitely. They had to really, color him up quick and good to
become more. Yeah, because you can't hide that blonde hair.
Mm-mm. No. So. Okay, so anyway, another thing, James, let me go back to something I think you forgot. You kind of brushed over with the teacher. She's like, okay, so your name is Alexander Roshenko. Can you help me with that? And and the kid's like,
exactly like a kid.
Right. But then she says, okay, I think I can figure it out. And then she says, okay, and what's his date of birth? At which Worf goes,
I just found out I'm a dad. Give me a break, will you?
Well, he knew in the past that he was a daddy. I mean, one of the things is, how old is he? You brought this 2-year-old, 3 or 4 year old on the ship. When did you have him, or whatever the case may be? But to not know your own kid's date of birth.
I mean, I think one thing for certain, I don't think Worf sent a birthday card while he was at the at Worf's parents.
Mm-mm. What's a birthday card to Worf? I mean, the only people remember any birthday is whenever the Roshenkos decide to throw a birthday party for him.
This is going to kill you. Wait till you see that one. This is Alexander in 2009. Sorry, guys. I was going online looking at pictures of Brian Bozall from Back to Family Ties up till 2009, and oh my god. Wait till you see something. Do a Google search and you'll understand why I'm saying Jesus.
I can see the picture you just sent.
Yeah, that's pretty damn scary. Anyway.
Looks like a serial killer.
Yeah, yeah. Got the tattoos all over his neck. Wow. Okay, so it's funny, while they're in 10-4, did you guys happen to notice Worf smiling and laughing a little? You know, when he's talking to his mother, and, oh, we're not ready for the grave, no. He actually looked like he was smiling and laughing. I thought that was pretty cool.
What, a Klingon smile? What's that?
Worf smiles.
Only time a Klingon smiles is when he sees his enemy's ship blowing up.
Mm-hmm. But you never see Worf smile.
Well, the things, I think that Michael Dorn's a pretty decent actor, and I do think that Worf is just reacting differently when he is around his parents. So, he does have kind of like subtle, emotion. He's not always on, he's not always kind of like warrior-like, right? He was embarrassed when his parents were on board and making a big fuss, and I just think he's just a little bit softer when he's around them. It's kind of expected.
Yeah, makes sense. But it's unusual to see Worf smile. Just like like Crusher said in a past episode, when everybody was leaving, Worf the guy who stands back there, you know, the guy who never smiles, the Klingon. So that's where I get that from, is that he never smiles. But now he did. So Alexander and Worf go on a little field trip to see the Gilvos and other things, other wildlife that the ship is carrying. And Alexander steals a little model. What was it? Some kind of dinosaur thing, I believe it was. And then he lies about it, and of course Worf finds it in his pocket and says, uh-oh.
And he tries to deal with it in typical Klingon fashion. I mean, you can't deal with Alexander with just basic Klingon philosophy. Alexander's not grown up in Klingon philosophy. You almost have to treat Alexander like a human kid. It's as strange as this might sound, because that's all he really knows. I mean, his mother didn't allow him to follow the ways of a Klingon, and the Roshenkos just reinforced whatever mom was teaching him at the time. Being around, she was more human-like than she was Klingon-like with Alexander, and I think that's where we get into the youthfulness of snatching something day one and lying about it. The little kids, when they're little, they do that kind of stuff. And where if Alexander was taught more of the Klingon ways, he would have been taught early in life that lying is not honorable, stealing's not honorable, and if you do it, then you own up to it to regain your honor back. And that's where a lot of this problem with Worf trying to adapt to Alexander come from, because Worf's philosophy is more Klingon, where Alexander's more like a human kid than a Klingon kid. The only difference between a Klingon kid and Alexander is Alexander's just a quite bit more stronger and a little bit more aggressive than a human kid. But that's taken account. He is Klingon. He's three-quarters Klingon.
Yeah, that's true.
Makes sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep.
Okay, well, know why I came on and talked about this.
So that's telling the story about Kallus and Moroth and how they fought because one of them was a bad boy. They learned their lesson, and Alexander learned too. So he'll never do it again.
Yeah, right.
Until tomorrow, that is. And then he goes back to school, and he actually tells the teacher, "My father said Klingons don't listen to teachers." Ha ha.
Now, if I was that, I would have took the flat end of a mech lift and put it across his backside.
I was thinking that, too. Why doesn't Worf spank him?
"I must spank you now."
Ah!
"Don't scream."
Ah!
"Stop screaming."
Ah!
"Stop."
There we go. Anyway, so
it doesn't work. Trust me.
I suppose not.
So let me ask a question to the Klingon. Do Klingon parents spank? Is that a thing?
Pain sticks.
And I'm talking about the disciplined children here, rather than to.
You know what? That's never been a subject that's brought up in most Klingon lecture halls. Strange as this might sound. I would assume, knowing as much of the Klingon philosophy as I do, that, like I said, one of the first things they say about a child, if they're old enough to pick up a knife, then they're old enough to start learning to be a warrior. So I would assume that they would be taught honor and discipline as soon as they're able to understand the words of the parents and their actions. So that's where I look at it and say, you probably won't see a lot of stealing or a lot of disciplinary problems, because I don't think they spank them. I agree with Lou on this. Yeah, let's give them a pain stick as a reminder of why you don't do this. But I don't think you'll have a lot of that problems other than fighting. I think fighting would be the biggest disciplinary problem you would have, because Klingons are rivals to each other all the time. So if one bullies, then they're going to eventually get back at the bully and to get revenge. See what I'm saying? So basically, more than likely, discipline would be probably teach them how to be a better fighter and then go out and...
No. I think it's more basic than that. Alexander refuses to clean his room. Would a Klingon parent spank... I mean, would a Klingon parent ever spank a Klingon child? I can't imagine children of any age being given a lecture, and that would be sufficient. So, I mean, do they spank?
Depends. Yeah, but when you're taught, keep in mind, when they're old enough to start walking and start swinging, they're already being thrown into the fighting pit to learn how to fight. So a spank is going to be like me walking up and touching you on the forehead, Lou. Okay? Because they've probably been hit harder in the fights that they've been doing to sharpen their skills than what a parent would normally do. Taking into account that we're assuming parents are being pulling their punches, per se. Okay.
Okay. Then, does that answer your question there, James?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, cool. Okay, so after life's lessons that were learned, it's now time to start this soliton test. Oh, yeah, that's right. We were also talking about the soliton wave.
We were?
Yeah.
When?
I know. We may have forgotten all about the soliton wave. But yes, we were talking about it at one point. Everything looks good in the test. It seems to be working pretty good. In fact, it's 450% more efficient than our own warp drive. But eventually, the test goes Willy Wonka and destroys the test ship, as well as damaging the Enterprise. It said the wave was expanding towards the ship. Any idea how, James?
Okay, so there is... Well, first of all, no. However, you know, generally we've seen, right, that there's a... Space isn't exactly a vacuum. If it's a... You could potentially imagine that a wave is sucking some energy out of there. So it might just be building up energy as it is colliding with things. And you might almost suggest that there's like some type of underlying field that it's using, and it's picking up resonance from that. There's also all this stuff about subspace. What the hell is subspace? So maybe it's even picking stuff out of subspace and... that's feeding it. But overall, right, I don't have a good explanation as to why the wave's 300 times bigger when they find it a little bit later on. Because you might suggest, but by conservation of energy, you would be dissipating rather than growing.
Yeah, you would think. I mean, how would it grow? It makes no sense.
If you were... You know, you might be picking up energy because you're going into a particularly, like, you know, a gravity well. So if you're heading towards the sun, right, you're going to be picking up energy because you're getting closer and closer and closer to it. So, you know, you might be thrown towards a particularly dense cluster or a particularly dense part of the galaxy. So, you know, it's not completely crazy, but it's not exactly, you know, trivial to suggest why.
It's like momentum when you go down the hill, Lou, too. It could be angling and picking up energy as it's moving, because it might be like a downward slope for some reason.
But isn't that gravity that causes that to happen?
Yeah.
But there's no gravity in space.
There is gravity in space. Why do people say there's no gravity in space?
There is?
Of course there is. How do we spend that phase spinning around the sun if there's no gravity in space?
Okay. Remember the episode where they had to start the the starship that was sending out an old warship that was stuck in a minefield. And the only way to get out was to basically let Picard run the ship instead of the computer. And Picard aimed the ship towards a big planetary mm-hmm. chunk of matter.
Right.
Okay. Right. That's gravity, Lou. Okay.
That makes sense.
He used the gravity of that big space rock to speed up the ship, and then he whipped it around, which gained even more gravity, more momentum. And that's what me and Robert are trying to kind of explain. Somehow or another, whatever it was that would cause this wave to maintain and stay, it picked up more than what it was supposed to, and it accelerated and got bigger. That's the only theory I could think of how it would grow when it's set in a setup where it's supposed to be consistent.
Now, one thing I do have a problem with in this episode on the science side, and this comes up a lot, and it came up on Redemption and stuff like that, which is that it grows to a point where you can't go round it, despite the wave being two-dimensional. And it's clearly two-dimensional. In fact, if this thing dissipated in three dimensions, you'd lose so much energy as it like have to become instead of a thin slither, it became a huge monster. But they always do it, so that it's no real reason to pick on this episode. But yeah, why they can't go round the wave, I have no idea.
It was too large to circumvent, so just go up above it or below it.
An inch. Mm-hmm.
A half an inch, yeah, right.
And it could be the wave is some kind of... remember the episode where the Enterprise got stuck in a two-dimensional being and it was heading towards a cosmic string or a black hole?
Yes, yeah, the cosmic string.
Okay, that's what that wave could be. That's why the wave was able to push a ship, because it is two-dimensional.
Hmm. Okay.
That's why the ship was able to surf...
But it wasn't
it like
in
a,
there.
Like a surfboard on a wave.
Yeah, but it wasn't in the wave. It was behind the wave. I mean, if you just go, you could just go above it. I mean, James is right. I mean, it's not three dimensions, only two dimensions. So you could go above or below it. But for some reason, they had to go right through it.
There's more tension going right through.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, they put the Gilfoles at risk.
They did. They really did.
The Gilfoles. Poor things, whatever that was.
I mean, they mentioned that aren't these guys being endangered, when their natural habitat was lost 200 years ago? And at that point, I thought, Archer, it was his fault. That's what they should have revisited on in Enterprise.
Okay, so we have to stop the wave because it's heading for Lemma Colony, I believe it was called, and now it's 300 times the size it's supposed to be, and like we said, their only way to do it is to go right through it and dissipate the wave right in front of it. And, of course, you're not going to believe this part, but it's going to cause radiation in the ship.
No.
No, really?
Gee, I wonder why.
So we have to evacuate this area, this area, this area, and this area. Oh, and by the way, there's some endangered species in this area. And guess what? There's a humanoid life sign. It seems to be Alexander Roshenko. Because, Worf told him, stay in our quarters. Okay. Did he? No. No. So he went to see the Gilfoles because him and the Gilfoles, apparently have become, what do you call it?
Friends.
Fab friends, right, James? Fab friends. Is that it?
I have no idea. Okay. Who says fab friends?
I always thought you guys did that, fab friends.
Ah.
So they become friends, him and the Gilfoles, so he went to see them, and of course... The room was falling around him. And wasn't he like knocked under some metal? Or he was just knocked out. But Worf and Wrecker got him out. They fired the torpedo. The wave dissipated. And Alexander really means that he's not going to do it again this time. Next time, right?
No.
And that's pretty much it. Like I said, it's probably a pretty quick show today.
Yep, basically. Hate to say it.
But, you know, LaForge did say something that it is pretty cool, though. I mean, they did it. They did warp without warp drive. And for a while there, it was something to see, except for when it, you know, overtook the ship, almost destroyed the ship. They had to go through it. They almost died twice. Beyond that, that's a very interesting concept. And if they work on it for another few hundred years, I got a feeling they'll do it. They'll make it work.
Yep, they would.
They'll make it work eventually.
Now, is this the first time we've had warp without warp drive? I mean,
later Archer's light ship, you know, does it?
No, Sisko's. So yeah, Sisko's ship.
Sisko's
hits,
ship.
Hits warp. Yeah. I mean, technically, falling into a wormhole is going to be giving you speeds greater than warp. I'm trying to think about whether the slipstream drive, you were able to ride the wave of that, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you're inside of it. Right. I don't remember much about the slipstream, to be honest.
A new technology, the Voyager. It basically...
Oh, that's right.
Where the Borg use tachyon beam to open up a spot where they have an accelerated warp line from point A to point B. The slipstream drive actually kind of like a warp bubble. It just basically allowed you to warp X amount of time, and it went a little faster than warp drive, as I think is the best take of what they had on that.
Okay. All right, guys. Is there anything else?
No, other than it was boring. the episode was boring. Again, it was one of them sideshows that they put on to introduce a new character, and they had to cause a conflict to get Worf and Alexander to kind of see eye to eye with each other on some stuff. So that's basically the whole synopsis of the show. Oh, yeah, and we had this new way of warping.
Oh, let me just throw out a complaint there. Because what they do is that they introduce this thing as a wave. Now, by the way, it might not be a wave and it might not adhere to the properties of waves, but they mention it enough that you can ride it, that it has grown, that it will be dissipated by having an inverse wave. So I'm gonna assume they actually are talking about a wave here. But they mention that only a perfect match in the wave will cancel it out. And they almost suggest that if they only get it halfway, it wouldn't make any difference. But that's not true. If you half cancel out a wave, you're still going to have half the wave left. It's, you know, it's how noise cancelling headphones work, right? They don't knock out everything, but the fact that there's like, you know, a good coverage of anti-wave means they take out a lot. So just during the end climax, they were claiming that if it wasn't perfectly aligned, it would be useless. It's not really true. They would have to go back and cancel out what was not cancelled out the first time. Or maybe what they cancelled out was enough and they didn't have to worry about it. Anyway, just a little bit of a nitpick.
Just a teeny tiny one?
Teeny tiny one.
Okay, then. I guess that's the end of that. So
that's our show, folks.
And then it's now time for our final thoughts and warnings on this. Final thoughts and ratings on this episode.
What?
Warnings.
Yeah, it's funny,
we're going to give you warnings.
Lou's got the camera on, so I'm watching his facial expressions when he's messing up.
I don't even know why. Well, final thoughts and warnings. Warning, this is a sucky episode. This is now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Brian, this is your episode.
Man, how many? No offense, don't take this the wrong way, but it don't even rate a 1. It rates a great big Klingon goose egg. 0. Oh,
we don't. But we don't do zeros.
Okay, what? Half.
Star Trek can't be a 0. Half. Just the fact that it's you, we don't even do halves.
Yeah, well, you do.
I do halves, but we rate them on a scale of 1 to 5.
Half. 0.5.
James?
Hello, yes?
What do you think?
What do I think about what?
Should we let the Klingon get away with that? 0.5.
Hey, yeah, I 3.5, Lou, then I can do 0.5. Thank you.
But it's still between 1 and 5.
I mean, it does make our spiel of we're rating it from 1 to 5 a lie, and I'm not that keen to introduce lies into the show. But on the other hand, it's going to bring down the guests' average, and the guests are always loving it more than we are. So I'm minded to agree with Brian on this.
I'm not worried about the guest average. The guest average can kiss my Klingon backside. Okay, I'm being blunt and honest. It's a 0.5.
They're still higher. They're still higher than us, James.
Do you want to go negative, Brian?
Yeah, right. Okay, I'll give you a 0.5. Okay, so I lost my notes. Here it is. So actually, there's not much to talk about, like I said. Worf's put in a strange situation, has to overcome it. He doesn't get a newborn that sleeps 21 hours a day and requires a baba once in a while. He doesn't even get a toddler who likes to watch Sesame Street or Dora, Dora, Dora the Explorer. Dora! Nope. He gets a 6-year-old brat who's been bounced around. First, he sees his mother die right in front of his eyes. Then he gets to go live with these strangers. And naturally, he is acting out. So you can't expect him to be any different. Worf gets him back and is stunned to find out what a bratty kid he is. And he expects a few stories about Kallus or Kallus or whatever you call it, and Moroth fighting with his brother because one of them told a lie. And when the story's done, all is good on the ship. No, it's not. He's still a kid. He's still gotta live his. Kidly ways. And one thing we even forgot to mention was Worf decided he was going to send him to a Klingon school. There they will teach you the things that I have not been able to in the last 15 hours.
Lou, you took that away from me. I've got that as a point. He does literally say, I'll send you there so they can teach you the lessons I have been unable to. And I've got in my notes, ... in the last few days, because he gives up on being able to teach him, and no wonder he's so good at management, right? And he's going to be first officer before long. He delegates like no one's business,
right? Yeah, so he's going to send him off to that Klingon school and whatever. Okay, but he ends up deciding that they're going to stay together, and he's going to challenge him to much even worse than Klingon school. Staying with me. I accept, Father. In the end, whatever. The Wave is a very interesting premise. Warp without warp drive. Geordi's not going to be put out of a job either way, because whether it's a warp field or a wave, it needs to be created. You need to have something to create this wave. But there's a lot of other duties an engineer would do on the ship. And besides, here's another question that we've never been asked or asked in the past that I just thought of. He's a chief engineer. Why is he even doing any work? I mean, isn't he the guy that schedules everybody else to work, does evaluations on his managers who actually do the work, or the managers' ensigns do the work? But Geordi's always hands-on, so maybe he's a better chief engineer than most. Just like Scotty.
I mean, realistically, the Enterprise must have nearly 100 engineers, right? In terms of crew members dedicated to engineering. I would imagine it's of that order of magnitude, given that there's over 1,000 people. He's carrying his team there, because I never see anyone else do any proper work. Other than Barclay.
That's what I'm saying. Barclay?
Every now and again.
Okay. I'll give you a good example of this. Any of you guys seen the In Harm's Way?
Nope.
It's a John Wayne movie. And the chief engineer down in the engine room, they're getting ready to leave Pearl Harbor right in the middle of a fight. And the chief engineer happens to be on board that day, and they tell him, "We're moving out. I want the ship ready to go. Take everything out, put it back on working order." And first thing he does was tell everyone what he wants done. Clear the checking gear, split the electric load, light all boilers. He's basically the ultimate supervisor. But he's also hands-on, because he goes over there and starts pulling the checking gear off after he's told somebody else to do it and realizes he's not there. He goes and runs and pulls the checking gear off. It's a screw that locks the propeller is what the checking gear is for the non-Navy people in this audience today. So he basically unchecks the checking gear. Okay? So he does, and I've been on our ship, the Butte. I didn't want to say the butt. But our engineer was in the hold all the time working on something. So it's not unusual to see a chief engineer working in the engineering on something. Just for the record, guys.
Okay. All right. And since you mentioned that, I'm going to have to try, if I can remember in post-production, to put something about the Navy in.
Oh, God.
It's been a while since I've done that. All right. Oh, so anyway, as I was mentioning here, where is it? Oh, there it is. Warp without warp drive. I do like the doctor who is the lead scientist on B'Elanna 3, and I suspect we're going to see him again, albeit in a different face. Overall,
who is that? I missed that.
I think he comes back as Barclay's supervisor, who doesn't believe anything that Barclay says. Pete Conrad? No, Conrad. Oh my God, he's not the astronaut. Pete. I know his name was Pete, but he's the one that took Barclay out of commission during Voyager when he wanted to try and get Pathfinder running to be able to communicate with Voyager. If you remember that,
yeah, it's one of my favorite episodes.
Pathfinder. So I think he was the supervisor from Barclay's supervisor at that point. So anyway, not the most memorable, not a very good episode at all. I like the premise, but it's still not this. The whole Worf fish out of water thing. I love the way, you know, a 35-pound child is just bringing this Klingon warrior to his knees. But it doesn't save it. Sorry, it does not save it at all. So I'm with Brian. I obviously I'm going to follow our 1 to 5 and come out of 1. So, James, pull it up for us. Give us a 4 or 5, right?
Well, I was not expecting to be the high watermark outlier on this episode, because I thought that most people would think it's a little bit dull, a little bit, you know, boring, but, you know, mediocre. And, you know, I'm not a kind of guy that likes children that much. So I thought I was going to be the old grump. But, you know, I'm coming in at a 2 out of 5. And it's not a great episode in any way, shape, or form, just to be clear. There are a couple of things that are nice, right? So it is at least nice that they acknowledge that Worf does have a son, and they are trying to put in place the consequence for that. it's not something that just completely disappears after one show in, like, you know, O'Brien's cello, and we've never seen it ever again. So, you know, they made the choice for him to have a son, and I think it hurts the character if 15 years later you go up to him and go, hey, didn't you have a son once? I went, oh, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, we never did anything. Now, maybe the thing that pushes up from 1 to 2 for me is that there is this... there's something that I've always considered to be kind of very self-evident about Worf, but in this episode they make it explicit, which is that Worf really is like a hyper-Klingon. He's been brought up away from Klingons, but with all of the lore of Klingons and all of the trying to adhere to the, you know, to the highest standard of the Klingon, you know, honor structure and stuff. And I think he mentioned it in this episode that, you know, when his parents died, he didn't have anything else other than his honor and other than following the Klingon way. And I think that that's a very, you know, I've always accepted and I think it's been very clear that that's really where Worf comes from. And I think it's nice that he has this moment when he talks to his son and he mentions that that's, you know, that's really the kind of man that he tried to be. You know, the absence of something was the thing that he latched on to, and he tried to like grow into that. You know, there are fairly nice stories about Kahless, although similar to Kanar, I don't like the fact that when it's first introduced, it's misspoken or it's mispronounced. That is unfortunate. And then we can get onto the B plot, which is the kind of the silence wave thing. And okay, I'm going to moan about it's not really going to work, but it's a nice, relatively, you know, they're introducing new concepts to people that, you know, who would have thought. Most people watching this aren't going to be sitting there thinking, hey, warp drive, you know, warp speed without a warp drive, you know, wouldn't that be a nice concept? So it's at least something that's going to tickle someone's imagination and put in a relatively benign science-based story that our heroes overcome by using their intelligence. And, you know, that's kind of Star Trek, right? So overall, it's obviously not a good episode. It's good that Alexander does stay around and he isn't just shipped off to another place. But yeah, I mean, I think that's really my conclusive thoughts or thoughts in conclusion. Not great. 2 out of 5. I didn't expect to be the high watermark on this episode.
Hmm. Well, as they say, poo happens.
Mm-hmm. Or defecation occurs. Okay, 2 out of 5. Then, cool enough. Let me set that in stone, get my chisel out.
3.5 right, divided by 3 is 1.5.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, really. So, yeah, that's still about what it gets. Okay, Brian, so the next time I have you on is Cost of Living here in about 9 shows.
Cost of Living? Oh, this ought to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just penciled you in for all the Klingon shows, whether you like it or not.
Well, that's fine. That's mm-hmm. cool. I'll try to make sure that my work computer shut off in time for me to get my regular computer back up and running so I'm not stalling out by a half hour.
Ah, well, it happens. Okay, so thanks for coming on, Brian. Is there any way people can get a hold of you if they want you on their show? Which you really should, by the way. But how did they get a hold of you, Brian?
And get a hold of me at my... By the way, I fixed my old email finally. CoussGorkon@yahoo.com.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can get a hold of me at OIC100MSG@gmail.com.
Got all that, guys? All right.
Do you want me to take it slowly?
CoussGorkon, G-O-R-K-O-N, by the way, in case you don't know.
Yes, please.
All right. Doc, how about you? How are they going to get a hold of you?
I mean, Twitter handle, TNG Rewatch. That's me.
Mm-hmm. Easy.
Why not? And as I mentioned at the top of the show, I am being flooded with all of the Star Trek Las Vegas snips and pictures and I will be going back next year. I'm gonna have to make that commitment. This year's not gonna work, although this year would have been great because this year, I mean, it would have been now, and I'm only sitting at home feeling a little bit ill. So great opportunity to have been there.
You might have to do a stopover in Indianapolis and Omaha on your way to Las Vegas.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be easy for him to do. Just, come from London over to Indianapolis, then to Omaha, and then to Las Vegas. You can handle that, couldn't you, Doc?
Well, hang on. Last time when I was in Vegas, I was there for, landed, had a kip, woke up the next day, and went to the convention, and basically flew out on the final day of the convention. Maybe next time I should actually properly, pad a bit of holiday around it. So that we
Hey, man, don't forget we went to the M&M store.
Well, sure.
And the Coca-Cola thing.
Sure, but, that, in complete fairness, there was still Star Trek on at the time, so we squeezed it in
that's right.
During the convention rather than anything else.
Yeah, had to do something. All right. Well, then, everyone, why don't you join us? Oh, yeah, okay, Brian, so we'll talk to you on cost of living. I never know how much I need to say goodbye to the guests. Okay. Anyway,
everyone better than just a guest.
Got that right.
An abandoned mystery ship leads to a startling discovery.
His world is gone, Data. We're going to have to help him build a new one.
A traumatized child holds the secret to an intergalactic trap.
Why wouldn't he tell us the truth?
He's still in shock.
But can Data's android connection prevent an Enterprise death mission?
We were attacked!
Impact in 3, 2... One on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
All right, so everyone join us next time as we review episode 11 for season 5, and that's going to be Hero Worship. And I know James's rating's going to severely increase for that one. Because James loves Hero Worship.
So when you going to put that Ferengi head on I sent you, old man?
Oh, I don't know. My God, I don't know if I don't know. Because this isn't a video podcast, so there's really no reason to. But and I can't go to the convention like that. I don't know why. I can't do it. I just can't. I can't pull that trigger.
I can.
But anyway.
I can tie you up, put the head on, doll you up, find you some fangs, and then I can drag you in. Like they used to do... what's his face? The Cardassian in the altered universe? Put a big collar around your neck and drag you in.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about in the DS9?
That was Garrick,
yeah.
Didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It had Garrick in that big old collar.
Right. That's a little too weird. Okay. Too weird. But anyway, we're going to have Simon Foster on for next week. And I know James's rating is just going to shoot through the roof for it, as well as mine. Maybe even Simon's, who knows.
Well, Simon might bring everyone... up the guest rating a little bit since I take it.
So everyone, take care and good night.
Kapla.
Prophet, it's a good time.